Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. Welcome to a special broadcast of Technovation. In this conversation, we'd like to share with you a fantastic panel interview from our recent Meta Strategy Summit. The topic was the move from a project to a product orientation in information technology. That conversation included three global CIOs of Fortune 500 companies, who I'll introduce momentarily, but the conversation was led by Meta Strategy's Central Region Office Head, Michael Bertha. Mike, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Peter. Glad to be here.
Mike, this really is a very interesting topic and one that seems to be rising in importance and curiosity among CIOs of big companies and others as we spend a lot of time, you and I, with chief information officers. But I wonder if in your own words, if you can provide a synopsis as to why you believe this to be a salient topic for our summit.
So as you alluded to, we work with a lot of tech executives, and rightfully so, everyone's focused on digital transformation. IDG did a 2020 State of the CIO survey, and actually the number one thing CEOs expect from their CIOs is to drive digital transformation initiatives. And what we found in our travels is that a lot of IT organizations focused on these transformations are not always structured in the optimal way to really partner with the business, jointly drive those transformations and navigate a marketplace that is really dynamic. So what do I mean they aren't structured optimally? They're by and large what we like to call still operating in the plan, build, run model, where in a classic case, the business asks for some requirements, they're handed off to IT, and then they disappear for several months until the project is completed and everyone sort of crosses their fingers and hopes for a great outcome. I think this shift towards product orientation, or shifting from project to product, as you said, is evidence that a lot of IT leadership teams are realizing hope isn't the best strategy when it comes to driving these transformations. And what we're seeing is organizations starting to manage IT like any other market-facing product, service, or even category that would be managed in a CPG, retail, or a hospitality company. So what does this look like? In the plan, build, run model, there would be a temporary project team assembled, let's call it for a couple months, to make an enhancement to an e-commerce portal. And then that project team would be disbanded and used capacity in other projects. In the product model, what we're seeing organizations do is assemble a longstanding, dedicated, and cross-functional team with perpetual funding to holistically own that e-commerce product and work really closely with the business to co-develop that product roadmap and figure out what features should be built next, what should go into discovery next.
Yeah, very interesting. And I alluded to three phenomenal IT leaders who joined you in conversation, Mike. Atticus Tyson, then the Chief Information Officer of Intuit. His role's actually expanded since then. He's now the SVP, Chief Information Security, Anti-Fraud, and Information Officer at Intuit. Arthur Hu, the Chief Information Officer of Lenovo, and Srini Kaushik, the Chief Information Officer and Chief Technology Officer of Magellan Health. Maybe take a quick moment, if you would, to talk about why these three gentlemen offered such a compelling set of voices on the topic.
Yeah, of course. So when we were in the early planning phases for the Meta Strategy Summit, we thought, why not get together some of the pioneers in the CIO world that are really leading this project to product shift within their organizations, because they would be the best to speak to the realities of this. And I think one of the most interesting parts of this panel were some of the challenges that they've personified, that they've encountered as they make this shift. As you start to think about any scenario where IT has a stronger influence on product roadmaps and strategic prioritizations, you naturally start to see some challenges. One of those main challenges that they speak about is skills. So product owners, product managers, which are needed in this product operating model, they need to have a pulse on what's happening in the industry outside of the four walls of the organization. And they need to be comfortable with concepts such as competitive analysis. And these are skills that have not traditionally lived within the IT organization. The other similar topic is culture. Srini Kaushik at one point, mentions culture eats strategy for breakfast. And this is very true in this context as well. IT has been viewed as an order taker in the past and not someone that traditionally has a seat at the table in strategic conversations. And there's a lot of business stakeholders that think that IT doesn't necessarily deserve that seat at the table. And I'd say the other really interesting part, Art Hu mentions that product-based IT is not appropriate for every situation. I think a lot of organizations go down this journey and they think, okay, well, everything has to be product-based. But the reality is that there are going to be examples such as migrating, multiple legacy instances of ERPs to one. That's a pretty static goal, and it's pretty clear what the outcome needs to be. And so product-based IT would not be necessary in a situation like that where the goal is static.
Very interesting. Well, thanks, Mike Bertha. Without further ado, let's go to your interview on the topic of the shift from project to product orientation in IT with Atticus Tyson, Arthur Hu, and Srini Kaushik.
Let's just jump right in. So Art, you are the CIO of Lenovo, a $45 billion multinational technology company, and you oversee about 3,000 business transformation and IT resources. So through our previous correspondence, I know that you're in the process of going through a product management operating model transformation, multi-year. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the impetus for taking that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm typically not much of a guy who's a solution looking for a problem. And so at Lenovo, I just noticed a pattern that as we started to come out of a period where we did a lot of ERP integration work, it took us a long time to digest a few acquisitions we'd made. And so the team had gotten really good and really used to working in the waterfall model, because that's where an SAP shop, and that's what you do, right? You have, whatever your budget is, tens of millions of dollars, dozens of countries, thousands of users, and you just run, right? You have a release every 6 months or 12 months, and you get really good at that. As we got to the tail, I started seeing a lot of weird conversations start happening in the business, where the business would say, well, that's too slow. And my teams also themselves started panicking, worried that we'd all be fired, because what would we do when we finished all the SAP work, right? And so, and for us, and as we started to try and adapt to that, the conversations, everyone seemed to be struggling a lot, right? And I think if you cut through it, the fundamental paradigm shift for us was that the level of uncertainty had significantly changed than anything we'd had ever been used to, right? So, it's SAP migration and ERP it's hard work, right? But it's conceptually not too complicated. Here's the target, go migrate, right? What's the strategy? Go migrate. What's the tactics? Finish the migration, right? So conceptually, it's not, right? That at least it doesn't take a genius to figure out what the strategy is, but it's hard work. And when you get used to that and suddenly you get to the end, and someone asks you, so what should we do? The team's just freaked out, right? They're like, what do you mean? There's no one imperative anymore. And so that marked a sea change in the level of uncertainty. And that's what started us down the journey, because the teams were not at all equipped. They were very good in a much more deterministic world. Finish the migration. Migrate the users, right? Train the users. Do the hypercare phase and do the post-production support. But when you take that away, it was a totally different world, and kind of the waterfall traditional one just didn't make sense anymore, right? And until we as an organization realized that, the business teams and my teams alike just struggled mightily, because we kept trying to force fit it. And so it would be, what do you want us to do? Like, what are you talking about? I thought we would at least talk about it, right? Or maybe you could tell me. And that was a totally different tenor of discussion. Right? So when we talk about impetus, that's kind of what we observed happening.
Okay, I'm going to turn to you, Atticus. You are the CIO at Intuit, a $5 billion software company and makers of QuickBooks, TurboTax, and I think I might have been off on the revenue based on your reaction.
That's like, we were talking, yeah, I'm a big fan of Quicken. Okay. It's not with Intuit anymore, but it was.
So from our previous discussions, and speaking with Peter, I understand you're one of the earlier adopters of, building a product management capability within your IT organization. So a lot of companies go down this journey and they start by putting a product owner or a product manager or a role out there. But what are some of the behaviors that indicate you're actually doing product management and not just putting the roles in place? Could you talk a little bit about some of those behaviors you're targeting?
Sure. And one of the things I'll say is, yeah, Peter does say I was one of the early thinkers on this, but I can't take credit for being all that smart. I actually just came from product teams. I've been at Intuit for about 18 years, and I ran engineering and product teams. So I think things are products. And so when I moved over to IT, I thought, well, let's make it look like a product organization. So it wasn't that I was all that smart. It's just I was doing what I knew how to do. But one thing about being a product organization is you have to have customers if you're going to have a product organization. And so I think to answer your question, one of the things you first have to do to know if you're acting like a product organization or if you're ready is, do you really know who your customers are? And are you organized around serving for those customers? Do you have the right metrics to know if your customers are happy and that you're working with them in the right way? And then you have to build relationships with those customers. Product managers, I think, in a lot of ways, are relationship builders. And when you're doing it with a mass market product, you might do that through big data. You might do that through Follow Me Homes. You might do that through other ways that you get close to your customers. The great thing about being in IT is your customers are all around you. And so you can spend time with those customers. And so, on the original question, you really have to have people in product management roles that really like their customers and really like driving those kinds of outcomes.
Thank you. Srini, you're the CIO and CTO at Magellan Health, a $7 billion healthcare company, provider of healthcare services and pharmacy benefit management. Given that we just heard from Art and Atticus, both technology companies, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about product management in a healthcare organization and talk about some of the nuances of working in healthcare.
Yeah. For people who know me, I'm not new to being the odd person out on stage, but I think, first of all, let's start with why would you even think about product management in this space? The answer to me is pretty simple. I don't think there's too many people in the room that'll say that my latest experience with the healthcare industry has been great. it doesn't matter if you're talking to your physician, having to deal with the insurance claim, or having to pick up a drug at Walmart, at Walgreens, or any of the pharmacies. It's the experience that the healthcare industry provides is not good. And I think when I took over for IT in this space, I wanted to bring that discipline, right? And it started off for me with a picture that I'm sure every one of you have seen, which is the user-centric design picture, right? It's those three intersecting pictures that say desirability, feasibility, and viability, right? And in the middle of that is kind of where a really good experience comes out. And one of the things that IT and technology in general tends to do is you start off with the feasibility. Can I actually build this using the technology? And then you go have to deal with the CFOs and COOs who say, can you make money off of it? So you move to viability, and desirability gets left out of the picture, right? Whether it's our end consumers or our internal customers of our systems, desirability kind of gets left out. Great companies that have done this and released good products start at that desirability stage of it. And that's kind of where we wanted to come in to say, it's like, look, we do a lot of things in IT. We are, again, I know it's been proven that it's not scientifically true, but we're more left brain than right brain. The experience and that desirability is where we wanted to start. So part of what we had to do is to, first of all, equip a lot of our IT folks with the types of skills that are needed to drive this. So desirability, I've got a couple of guys here who work in my teams. We've emphasized right from day one that I started design thinking. How do you actually have empathy-based conversations, whether it's your internal contact center user or, going out and everyone has a chance to interact with some part of the healthcare industry. How do you actually listen to them, get to the core of that problem, then take the desirability? The next step that we try to go through is to go into the viability. And again, we shamelessly steal, right? Reuse, whatever the term. So the viability component of it for me is like it's a one-pager that most of my guys would recognize. It's a concept borrowed from Lean. It's an A3 that's built on Amazon's press release, where he said, okay, so if you've talked to someone and if you come up with an idea and you think you can work on it through design thinking, you can very quickly put a one pager together. Who's your customer? What does that end press release look like for you? Again, I say quickly, the word creating one page is tough when you're trying to put that down. And then that then moves into the true product the development, where you borrow from experts like the people sitting here saying, okay, how do I actually get to the point where you can go to an MVP first, minimum viable product? How do I test the minimum viable product before I start throwing more into it? That discipline is what we end up calling product management, which is consistent. I think you go to any innovative company, you're going to see very similar techniques. But we felt that that could be applied to a lot of the areas within IT, and that's kind of where we've gone.
Could I underscore something, Srini, you said? Coming into IT, not having been in my whole life in IT, what you just said about starting from can we do it, feasibility first, is one of the biggest things I found in the IT organization at Intuit, is they always started with that feasibility thing. And when you're sitting in a room with business people and you start there, that's really a bad place to start. Because you usually start with, well, it can't happen because of this, or there's security, or that. And it was the biggest mindset shift that we've had to drive, is to start talking with what's possible first, and more about how we could, whether we can or can't. And so I just really wanted to underscore that. That was really profound what you said. Yeah.
No, I think that's an interesting point. I also echo that. I think early on, one of the panelists, someone basically said, speak English.
Yes.
Right? Not like some string, because even my teams, right, I'm pretty good with the acronyms, right? Sometimes one of the things I've taken to doing is I get these project approvals that are basically like strings of acronyms, right, that no one could understand. But I think the point really is the power of the right question up front, because the teams will always say, well, security says this, and here's how you could do it. And what's possible, or should we do it? Like, why does this even make sense? Right? And it's a totally different mindset.
All right, let's stay with you, Art. So one of the other, several key principles that are critical to having a true product management culture is autonomy and empowerment. So making sure your product teams are autonomous and they're empowered to make decisions so they can actually deliver quick and go to market faster. So Art, if we think about enablers, I wondered if you could think about any critical enablers to giving your teams autonomy and empowerment, whether that's technology, whether that's cultural, or anything that you might offer.
Yeah, so maybe this one I'll go by way of counter stories, because Jason, who's on my team, is in the crowd, so you can keep me honest later on at the break. You can ask him how we're actually doing. Maybe just by way of counter stories, right? Because we're by no means perfect, and we're very much along the way. So one thing around the people we've talked about a little is just making sure they have the skills, right? Because I think one of the first things we figured out, and one of the false starts we had, was once we kind of signaled intent to move in this direction, people were tripping over themselves, like outside my office, trying to like show me I'm like the agile guy, right? I'm like a PM now. Right? And I'm like, you couldn't spell PM if I gave you a P and an M, right? Like really, these people just, I hate to say it, they're great people, but they couldn't be a product manager in that sense. And so one of the false starts was just making sure that you back it up with some notion of how you get from here to there. Right? Because I think people were so eager to show that they were doing the agile thing that the appearance of it became more important than the substance. Right? And so I think the training aspect and charting a path, which was, hey, there's a path here for everyone and they can cross and it's not a single one, was very important. Another one of the false starts we had, but it's more around making sure the process is in place for autonomy. I was with the review with the team and they're like, oh, we're so agile. We're sprinting like every week. I can drop changes. We've got the test harness. And I'm like, this all looks great. I'm like, but I just came out of the meeting with the business VP and he hates this. Right? They're like, oh yeah, we only talk to him once every 6 months. Right? So, right? And I think people, right, in the context, in terms of autonomy, right, they actually, you have to help your teams understand what is the goal of what you're after, right? So the team that was sprinting every week like crazy in their kind of their room, like in the basement somewhere, and talking to the business once every 6 months, it was like slower than ever and worse than ever, right? It wasn't better than ever. And so teams really need to understand from a process perspective as well. And I think once you have the skills and you put in place, it's one of those things where you start doing the right things. And if you understand the spirit, things start to improve. Not immediately, but over time. So those were kind of interesting false starts, which I think illuminated some of the things we needed to go figure out.
All right, so I want to build on that a little bit. So we can all talk about product management and we can live in an IT utopia, but as Art has alluded to, there's undoubtedly challenges bringing the business along this journey. So making the business see the value of attending a daily stand-up, or making the business see the value of having engineers engaged in customer development and persona development. So could you talk about some of the challenges that you had as you rolled this out at Intuit and how you get the business to see the value of collaborating together?
Sure. I mean, a couple of things, and also building on what Art said too, is, you know, you have to connect the team to the customer, and you have to connect them directly to the customer, and you kind of get out of the picture a little bit. It's less about pleasing the CTO or the CIO, and it's much more about pleasing the customer. And you have to have the right metrics, and you have to agree on with your customer what the right metrics are. We use Net Promoter Score for some of our things. For some of our things, Net Promoter Score is not the right thing. So it's not the be-all and end-all answer. And we've had different teams where when we said, hey, as the product owner or as the customer of this, you have to be in a bi-weekly demo of what we're about to ship. Like, well, I don't really have to show up to that. It's like, well, how are you going to know what you're going to get? And if you don't, you're really not going to be able to shape the next 2 weeks of what's working. And so you really have to just make sure they're totally bought in. And a couple of the teams, I said, great, we'll go back to Waterfall then if you don't want to show up. And you have to call their bluff a little bit, because if they're not willing to make the change, you're not going to get the results from it.
Can I just have to add one small thing on that?
Please.
I think the last point on Waterfall is super important, because one of the other false starts was everyone thought, like, if you weren't product, you were also evil and stupid, right? And there are some things, like we run an SAP shop, right? My finance modules, they're going to be on Waterfall forever, right, basically. And my CFO doesn't want me iterating on our general ledger every week, right? So that's okay. Right. I don't know if it's because I think we talk about it a lot, and it's easy for people to believe, oh, everything should be product. It's like, well, no, sometimes it's okay.
Yeah, and you're right. There's some large projects where you really do want to deliver in large chunks and you don't want to be iterating. But, you know, we're overhauling. We have 9 billing systems. We're going down to 2. And one of the things we're trying to get to is biweekly releases. We're at monthly now. And we're trying to release sections of features. One of the big things on these big releases is sometimes you can't get it all done in 2 weeks. And so what do you do with that? And we still want to push that code to production, though, so we get it all the way out through the test harness. And so we're releasing features behind feature flags. And the big fight with finance there was, okay, great, I'll give you control of the feature flag as to when you turn it on, and we won't control it. And then everything was good. And so a lot of times, too, you have to be a little bit creative about how you work with your partners, and you have to not be so dogmatic that, okay, all the product managers are going to live in IT. That's the other thing I found. With finance, that actually works great. With marketing, not so great. They want to have the product managers in their organization. And so I've had to be a little flexible about where they live.
Well, you know, it's one of the cool things about sitting with really smart people and following others that have made some really good points, right? You know, I think for me, how I tie these things together, we've been looking at building product management as a discipline, as a capability, as Seemantini and others talked about. And in order to do that, we had to equip our people with a different set of skills that they weren't used to. So clearly, Agile is one of them. And just like with this, it's not a hammer looking for a solution. You don't apply it everywhere. But Agile, where applied, makes perfect sense, and you want to use it. I talked about design thinking a little bit. The third skill that we keep telling our people, and again, I think it's part of what a good product manager needs to have, is the ability to tell stories. And you asked the question about how do you bring different business partners in place. Well, for us, it's not about getting them to sit in weekly show and tells or attending daily sprints or any of those things. Because the finance stakeholder is looking for a different aspect of that story. So if you understand what you're actually building, you're able to talk to the finance to say, like, look, the finance team to say, like, look, the MVP really doesn't address any part of your business process, but here's the key metrics we're looking at, because the key metrics we're looking at as part of the MVP is not your traditional ROI and others, but it is about adoption and return users, right? So when I release the product, and if I expect to see 1,000 users sign up for it, and I got only 100 sign up, that's going to tell me something. It's not financial numbers, but it is a metric that helps us get there. So I think being able to understand the product and tell the story as it resonates with different stakeholders, because the COO is looking for a different aspect of the story than the CFO is. And my sales team is looking at something very different. And the sales teams that are going out there absolutely want to be part of the show and tells. because they can't wait to show it to people that that's there, versus the CFO is going, well, why are you inviting me to this stuff? This is like, you know, are you going to do the show and tell on Excel? I'm kidding, but like, it's essentially that storytelling skill has been something that we've worked very hard to kind of get our product managers to say, yeah, I recognize that this is not a Scrum, a Kanban board, and all of that other stuff, but taking all of that and speaking English is going to be important, and understand who your audience is when you tell that story.
Great. So another, and I want to change directions a little bit. So another one of the key principles when we talk about product management are that we want product teams to be persistent, meaning long-lasting, and perpetually funded. And so some of the other panels, the idea of shifting from project to product-based funding has come up. And I was wondering if any of you could, you know, chime in on how you've thought about funding differently as you shifted from project to product.
Yeah, maybe I'll start. I liked the conversation earlier about capabilities. And I think one of the speakers said 200-some capabilities or 267. I don't remember the exact number. But we've done a similar thing. We've broken everything we do into an actual capability it delivers for the business. And just this year now, we finally have a reasonably good approximation of the run the business cost of each of those capabilities. And what we're trying to do now is basically any new work we do, change the business work, is funded in what is it going to do to the run the business work for all those capabilities. Is it going to bring it down? Is it going to bring a new feature to one of those capabilities? And to start to separate that and to put pressure on our run the business budget to continually drive efficiencies to free up money for change the business and have those directly correlate. And this year was, it's taken us about 2 years to try to get that view and get that organized that way. But it's changed the conversation entirely about teams trying to justify projects for all these other different reasons. And now it's very grounded in what capability we're delivering for each of those.
Now, for us, like, we've actually, if you look at my organization, the organization kind of resembles a set of capabilities that are supported by products. Like, so, for example, in healthcare, we don't talk about individual systems; we talk about care management, right? And there's a suite of products that end up supporting care management. So to me, when you look at my budget, and I know Peter spent time looking at our budgets and others, like, you actually see. We have a care management component of it that has a product owner, that has a service owner who's responsible for delivering the service levels on that product. It's broken up into two categories. There's obviously the OPEX and the investments that you're making on it. The operational expenses essentially also have a backlog associated with it, because whether you're addressing security debt or technical debt or anything like that with that has to go through your operations. And then investments to improve capabilities, add new features and functions actually comes in through it. So we really don't, you look at it as a portfolio of products and services that you're supporting, and the projects that you perform are framed to either improve the operational performance or add new capabilities. And behind the scenes, each of these product teams is supported by one or more standing teams. So Vinesh, who's sitting here, runs our claims adjudication platforms in our pharmacy PBM business, and he's got three or four standing teams. So we kind of know the work and the funding coming in and going to them. The standing teams have the ability to flex, right? You know, we keep back to the forming, norming, and storming sequence, right? You know, the real benefit of having a standing team associated with that product is you kind of get past the forming and norming thing very quickly, and you're in the storming mode constantly. So we try to keep a standing team associated with the product, with capacity coming in and out, based on the workload that comes into it. So,
Art, Srini, Atticus, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, and please join me next week when my guest will be Greg Sullivan, the Chief Information Officer of Carnival Corporation.